This is Carmen DeFalco on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Carmen and Yurko podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Carmen and Yurko, WMVP Chicago. Did you miss some Carmen and Yurko? You don't have to miss anything. Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Steve Miller Band. I mean, these I know. This hour is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. We don't know what lies in the weeks and months to come, but one thing is certain: mortgage rates are near historic lows. Never been a better time to maybe look into a cash out refi. Visit with our friends today at the homeloanexpert.com. It is Carmen and Yurko. Alex Brown in just a second. And the first hour, I failed to mention Yurko's Twitter poll of the day. Yurko, we're into the second round in your bracket challenge, right? The 16 greatest moments of the Cubs 2016 run. And we got the 1-8 matchup today. Vote online at Yurko64 on Twitter.
That's a very important matchup here, Carm.
Yes.
Really. I mean, what a strong 1-8 matchup if you're looking at it. Just solid as long. The final out by Chris Bryant.
Yeah.
Going up against Mickey's game-winning RBI in the same game.
Yes.
The one that scored the eighth run.
They're separated by like 20 minutes, right, Yurk? Those two moments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Celebrated by 20 minutes. Both came after the rink, Garm.
That's right.
Both came after the tarp was lifted from the field when 17 minutes became a lifetime.
And the tarp being brought out onto the field was a 3 seed yesterday that advanced in round two.
Already 937 votes. People know that we have gotten serious in this situation.
And people going with Bryant's final out right now, 71% of the vote, Yurk.
Yesterday's 314 game only had 600-plus votes.
Mm.
And it was a runaway. And
the three.
Look at this one already at 9:37. I'm glad to see the fans are starting to step up and make things happen here with the pool and the poll and all that good stuff.
So make sure you vote at Yurko64 on the Good Kids timeline, and then we'll have another one up there for you tomorrow as we wrap the week. It's our pleasure right now to say hi to Alex Brown, who does such a great job covering the Bears, and of course, getting ready now for the NFL draft, which is going to go ahead as planned. I mean, in a much different sense, no Vegas, no show, no glitz and glamour. Everybody's sequestered at their homes, but they will still conduct the draft, and it will start 1 week from today. Alex joins Carmen and Yurko now on ESPN 1000. AB, how you doing?
Doing great, man. How you doing?
We're doing all right. How's quarantine been for you? You keeping it exciting as best you can?
Oh, my gosh. Having all the kids at the house is a challenge.
Yes, it
to
is.
To be honest, I think I'm gonna be a big advocate of all teachers getting extra money because what we have to do right now, trying to go through all the schoolwork and get the kids, keeping them, I guess, motivated and their attention span just goes after a half hour. It's insane.
Man. I know.
It's tough.
I'm with you. I've got two young kids at home, too, a second grader and a kindergartner. So, yeah, I mean, if they somehow say these kids aren't going back to school in the fall, I'm storming the castle. You're taking my kids to school. I'm sorry. That's it. These kids have to learn. We're not qualified for this, Alex.
Exactly. I'm with you. Trust me.
It's absolutely crazy. So far, what have you thought of the Bears offseason? You know, free agency, let's face it. I think it was kind of a welcome break. I know the NFL got a little criticism. Yurko and I felt that was unfair. I mean, they can conduct their business without coming in contact with one another. There was a free agency. It gave us something to talk about, and the Bears made some curious additions, but also a few that we think are going to be helpful. So what did you think so far of the offseason?
I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I think they did a couple things where you can legitimately say, like, a guy's going to come in and make a huge impact. Assuming they stay healthy, the guy will come in and make a huge impact. Quinn, I think Quinn's going to be phenomenal. Opposite Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks. So I think he's going to be a huge addition to that team, to the defensive side. And then it helps the back end. It helps the safeties. It helps the corners. So you can get to the quarterback with your front four, and you don't have to blitz. It just makes the defense that much better. Looking at the quarterback position, I mean, Foles coming in, if you can just be a little more efficient Scoring 18 points a game last year isn't going to get it done. But when your defense is giving up 18, you got to assume that the defense will get a little better than they were last year because they added Quinn. I think Quinn is a huge difference. He makes Elijah make everybody else better. So defense give up 18, you can let's bring that down to, let's say, 16. The offense just be a little more efficient, score more touchdowns, a few more touchdowns and field goals, and you put that number at 21, 22. Well, hell, sounds like you're winning more football games to me. So I think they've done a good job with those two, but the ones that scratch your head are the tight end position. I mean, that position we really need. And I was down in New Orleans with Jimmy Graham when he first came into the league. He was a monster, okay? He was a monster. He was just learning the game, and my gosh, you knew he was going to be something else. I think he's nothing more than – I know he's going to go out and he's going to try hard, okay? Don't get me wrong. But the Jimmy Graham that we saw down in New Orleans, he's not going to be that guy. I think just looking at what he did at Seattle and then looking at what he did with Aaron Rodgers up in Green Bay, if he only did a little over 400 yards in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, what do you think he's going to do here?
The only thing you can hope so is maybe in the red zone he becomes a viable red zone target. Big body down there, opposite of Robinson. You know, maybe if you're not getting the ball in, there's a big target to shoot at in the end zone. I guess that would be the only positive thing.
But was he that last year? Was he that with Aaron Rodgers?
No. Right. It was not. You know what I mean? They ran the ball efficiently well, and they had 20-plus some odd touchdowns out of their running game. So once they got to the red zone, they had the tremendous ability to get the ball in via the run, where they didn't have to do that via the pass. The only way Jimmy Graham was scoring touchdowns with the Green Bay Packers is if he was doing it from 20 yards and out, because they had such a tremendous running game up there. My question to you is, what's your assessment of this offensive line and what abilities they have as they move forward?
Oh, they're definitely they're going to need that big some guys that can just make holes. I mean, but that's if we want to run the ball. If we don't want to run the ball, then get some guys that can one-on-one pass protect and stick with a block for more than 3 seconds. I mean, if you don't have that, then you need to pound on a defense to make them quit, in a sense, late in the football game. So the offensive line, I think, everybody wants the Cowboys of 4 years ago or so offensive line, the one that they put a first-round pick in, seems like at every position, and they hit on it. So everybody wants that, but you don't necessarily need that. If the quarterback understands where he's going to go with the football and he doesn't make offensive linemen have to block for 6 seconds, then you can kind of get away with it. We don't have to go too that far back. Just look at Bushrod when he came here from New Orleans. He was a Pro Bowl left tackle. Then he gets here, and all of a sudden he's a liability on the offensive line. And it was, well, the quarterback's holding the ball a lot longer than Drew Brees held the ball. So if the quarterback can be more efficient and understand where he's going and read defenses, understand where he's going with the football, I think you can make up for the lack of ability up front. I'm not a believer that Coach Nagy is going to change his spot, so to speak. He's going to throw the football. He's not going to run the ball. So I would love to see Montgomery get an opportunity to carry the ball 10, 15, 18 times a game. I don't know if it's going to happen.
Alex Brown is our guest. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. That quarterback competition, Alex, do you think it'll be a fair and legitimate one? And do you think that the coaches kind of have a guy in mind that they want to win that competition going in?
I think they have a guy in mind. But I think if it is a competition, I don't think there's any way that Mitch wins it, to be honest. I don't need any more from Mitch. I've seen enough, and I don't believe he will beat out Foles in a quarterback competition. I just don't. I think both of them have a good understanding of the offense. I think there's certain things that Mitch can't do, and I'm not convinced that Foles can't run the entire offense the way it should be ran. Now, will he make the proper throws at the right time? Well, that's yet to be seen. But as far as understanding pre-snap stuff, understanding what the defense is trying to do to you, understanding where you need to go with the football. I think Mitt still struggles with that, and that's not this offense. That is at the quarterback position where a quarterback should be able to do that. And I've seen that Mitch struggles with that. You shouldn't be struggling with that, in my opinion, 4 years, in your fourth year. You shouldn't be struggling with that as a quarterback in the NFL, especially when you're taken as high and so much is put on your plate to lead this team as being the face of this football team. I just don't see it. I think if it is a quarterback competition, Foles is going to win, and he'll be the starter come week one.
Should the Bears draft a quarterback next week?
If Jalen Hurts is there, mm-hmm. I'm taking him. I am taking him. I understand some of the stuff that we have. I mean, we need a strong safety. We put Eddie Jackson back at free safety. I would love to get Delpit. But if I got to choose, if Delpit is there and Jalen Hurts is there, I think he could be that guy that you've been looking for a long time. I think he'd be that guy. So I just like his natural leadership ability. I mean, you look at what he did at Alabama. You look at what he was able to do at Oklahoma and in his 1 year there. I mean, he changed a lot that was going on, and guys follow him. Not because he's a rah-rah guy either. He's not a real rah-rah guy. He makes plays, whether it's with his feet, with his arm. He does it, man. I like him. I think it'll be a tough choice if Delpit and Hurts is there, because we desperately, in my opinion, I think we desperately need a strong safety that can come down and hit. And my gosh, having Delpit and Eddie Jackson back there, ooh, man, that would make for a hell of a defense. So it'd be a tough choice, but yeah, I mean, it's a choice that Pace and Nagy, they're going to have to make that choice. And if you feel comfortable with Foles and Trubisky there, then get your safety and solidify that secondary as far as the two safety positions, because for a long time we didn't have anybody after Mike Brown. We yearned for that for that safety, and now we got Eddie Jackson. It's like, okay, and then you move him to strong safety. It's like, whoa, he's not the same guy. Okay, so let's put him back. Now let's find a strong safety, and I think Delpit would fit that. The kid out of LSU, I think he would fit perfectly there. And the nastiness, the expectation, I mean, being a winner, being a champion from LSU, I think he fit perfectly in there. So it's going to be a tough choice, but we got 2 second-round picks. So
maybe hopefully both.
hopefully we're in that situation where we got to make the decision.
You come away with both, maybe. All right, Alex, we appreciate the time. You be safe, okay?
Thanks, man. You too.
We'll talk to you. There's Alex Brown, good old number 96. When we come back, Shaq on MJ and his Lakers versus the 90s Bulls. We'll play it next.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Yes, we're all very excited for The Last Dance, which is going to debut on ESPN TV on a Sunday night. Oh, I can't wait. Carmen and Yurko. Shaq, who was he on? It was an MMA podcast or something? Is that right? I think that's who he was.
Ariel Helwani's.
There we go.
MMA show.
Ariel Helwani's MMA show. This was Shaq, Yurko. We got a couple bites to play here. Talking about Jordan, especially some of the early years when he was in Orlando. They were in the same conference, and Shaq said he was terrified of Jordan.
I finally revealed that when I first got in the league, I was terrified of Jordan. Because the reason why I was terrified, because as a kid, it's like you're watching a god. Now you're on the same court with God. And all the stuff that he was doing when I was a kid is true. He can fly. He can bump you in the air, still be in the air when you come down, lay it up. He's in perfect condition. His jump shot is crazy. If he steals a ball on the break, all the fans are going to stand up and he's going to dunk it. So everything I was seeing when I was a kid was really true. A lot of guys, I was like, oh, you're not, I saw you on TV, but now that I'm here, you're not really that good. But with him, everything you saw as a kid was true. But, you know, once I got over that, then I started to, you know, play a little better. But that team, the one that went 72-10, I knew they was going to win the whole year.
It's, you don't hear Shaq saying he's terrified of many guys, but Michael was larger than life already and was the best player in the world when he got into the league. This was Shaq talking about his Lakers up against Jordan's Bulls. So let's see where this goes here.
The three-peat Lakers in your primes would have beaten those Bulls in their primes.
Of course, yes, easily, yeah.
Why?
Because I would have killed Luke Longley, Bill Winning, Cartwright, yeah. So the factor is me and my free throw shooting. So, okay, another question is, our Lakers in their prime and Chicago in their prime, who is Phil Jackson with? Is he with us or is he with them?
I think he's with them because he was with them first.
So he would have tried the Hack a Shack thing, which so the I still would average my 28, 29, but the key would have been the free throws. So, you know, with me, it's always 50-50, so hopefully it would have been on. If I'd been on, we win. If I'd been off, we lose. But, you know, I love having these conversations. They would have did this, we would have did that. But I could strictly say I think we would have beat them.
I could strictly say. First of all, Phil invented the Hack a Shack, so that's a good point by Shaq. You know, he said, wait a minute, now who's Phil coaching? Us or them? Because he coached them both.
Well, there's always important factors, Carmen.
And that's one of them, Yerk.
Yeah. Mitigating factors out there.
I like how he says he would have killed Luke Longley. What did he call Bill Wennington?
Bill Wennington.
I don't think he said Bill Wennington.
Oh, Bill Wenning.
I think he called him Bill Wedding, maybe. And Bill Cartwright. First of all, Cartwright could guard just about anybody. Don't be fooled. Bill Cartwright might have not have looked. Oh, you better believe it. Are you kidding me? And Bill Cartwright had a nasty streak in him when he had to play defense, let me tell you. I'm going to say, boy, those Shaq was such a freakishly dominant force, wasn't he, Yerk? I mean, he does bring up a point. Like, how do you stop that? You know, like, who do you have that stops it? Scotty or Michael guards Kobe, obviously. And the other probably guards Derek Fisher, right? That's how they would have split that up? Probably Michael
or,
on...
No, or if you put Harp on Fish or no?
Yeah, maybe put Harp on... Maybe put Harp on Fish, you put Michael on Kobe, and then who's... I'm trying to think, who is their...
Scotty's on Kobe. Scotty's your best defender,
who's
right?
Michael guarding?
Who's guarding Worthy?
But no, bro, I'm talking about the three-peat Lakers. We're talking about the Shaq Lakers. We're not Worthy.
Worthy!
We're talking about the Shaq Lakers.
Who's got Cooper?
Nobody's got Michael Cooper. You don't have to worry about Kurt Rambis. You don't have to worry about Magic or Byron Scott. You don't have to worry about
it. So who's the other starter on this?
That's what I'm trying to think. Like, so it would have been Shaq and Kobe, Fisher, Ori. Who am I forgetting, guys? From that
guy,
I'm forgetting somebody. Obviously,
you're like, missing a three.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I know we're way too biased too. I'm going Michael and the Bulls. Even that second three-peat team, Yerk.
I'm going
Michael's Bulls. I think what Jeff Van Gundy said earlier today with Cap was correct, that the best Bulls team out of the entire run was probably the 93 team. I think the 93 team, first of all, you had to get past a ridiculously good Pat Riley-coached Knicks team, right? In 93 in your conference. You had to beat Barkley and KJ, and that was, we're going to put this web poll up tomorrow. We'll do it for Friday, getting ready for the weekend. Like, which was the best team the Bulls beat in the finals? I mean, those Jazz teams were really great, especially that 97 team. But the 93 Suns were awesome. I mean, like, you still had Barkley, who was a completely dominant force.
He won the MVP that year.
Or did Hakeem win it? Was that Barkley's?
That was Barkley.
Yeah, I think that was Barkley's year. Like, Barkley was so good. He was so good in the playoffs that year. Do you remember how ridiculously good he was in the playoffs that year? You know, you had Dan Marley was, you know, you could plop Dan Marley into this era and he'd be okay. Sharpshooter that you get him open and he was never going to miss. You had, I mean, like, that 93 Bulls team was so good, but I'd still take that second three-peat Bulls team over Shaq's Lakers.
I'm taking, I don't know which one I would take. I think the Bulls are going to be the ones that are going to be winners in this thing. It doesn't matter if I'm biased or not. That's the direction I'm going to go, and that's the direction I'm going to stick with, period.
But that
that's who I love. And it was Barkley in 93, guys.
Yeah, Barkley was the 93. Yeah, he was ridiculous. Okay, I think the team won the next year.
You guys were searching for a third name.
Yeah,
so if you look at those Laker teams, their best title run was probably the first one because that season they won 67 games.
Which year was that? Was that 2001, Chris?
That would be the 2000 season where they beat the Pacers in the finals.
Okay, the 2000.
And that Pacers team was really good, remember?
It was.
The third high scorer on the team was Glenn Rice with 16 points per game.
That's what I was forgetting, Glenn Rice.
So then Ron Harper averaged 7 points. He was their fourth leading scorer. Then you have A.C. Green, Derek Fisher, Robert Horry. Rick Fox is their ninth man.
Oh, my gosh.
Brian Shaw is their third point guard off the bench. I mean, that was a pretty stacked team, but if you look at the other two, Laker teams from that three-peat were mainly Shaq and Kobe and then some, like, add-ons, where that first team, you could argue Glenn Rice,
yes,
averaging 16 points a game, that's pretty tough to
defend. That's pretty good, but Michael guards Glenn Rice then, right? There you go. Scotty guards Kobe. Yep. Michael guards Glenn Rice.
Done.
Harp guards Derek Fisher.
And I could throw Rodman on Shaq for a little bit, get Shaq annoyed.
Yeah. You could get him annoyed. I agree. I don't disagree with that.
Would Shaq get annoyed?
Yes.
Rodman guarded him in the Orlando series. Yeah, Rodman did when he was even younger. That's true.
Guys, what's the NBA's most valuable player award trophy called?
The most I'm not sure.
It's got a name, and when I just looked it up because I'm looking for a list of all the guys. Does anybody know the name? Name for the first commissioner of the NBA.
I know the championship trophy is the Larry O'Brien Trophy. I don't think I know the name of the commissioner.
This Carm, and boy, I tell you, tough trivia. I know these players can't wait to win it. The Maurice Podoloff Trophy.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten that.
Yeah. Can't wait to win that, guys, huh?
Black brings up a good point when he was looking at that roster, though. Do the Bulls get Harper or do the Lakers get Harper? Ron Harper was on both those teams.
Well, are you going early three-peat or second three-peat?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I guess you can go first three-peat, then it wouldn't matter. If you're
so
going
Harper
second,
guards Harper and it's a wash.
Harper guards Harper. That's it. I mean, do we still get to claim Ron Harper with the 90s Bull? I mean, we have to. Yes, Harper guards that. Harper. There you go.
Harper guards Harper.
So a couple other things on this day.
So Harp won four titles.
Won five. He was on two straight teams.
Harp won five.
Horace won four
because he was on one of those Lakers teams. Harp won Harper won five out of 6 years. Ron Harper won then. That's crazy. The only year he didn't win was in 99 when he was still on the Bulls, right out of the lockout, I think.
Yeah.
And then he went to the Lakers the last 2 years to finish out. Well, Kukoc too, York.
Yeah.
It was Kukoc, Harper, Wennington for, I think, I want to say like the lockout year. I think Wennington was still around, but yeah.
Kukoc finish with Milwaukee?
He might have. They shipped him off to the Sixers, and then you might be right.
He did play for Milwaukee. I don't know if that was his last team.
His last stop might have been Milwaukee, Yerk. I answered yesterday Waddle and Sylvie's Final Four question. After Michael and Scotty, of course, who were your four favorite Bulls from any of the championship runs? You know, you could have mixed and matched. So I went with Tony. Tony was my third favorite Bull out of that whole crew, Yerk. I went with Tony, Horace, Dennis, and then for me, I was going back and forth between like Pax, Cartwright, Ron Harper. I went with Pax. That was my four, but Kukoc was my number one out of that next crew. I love Tony, man.
Yeah,
I really
Kukoc,
did.
Rodman.
Right? Kukoc and Rodman. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I went Kukoc, Horace, Rodman, Pax. Yeah, that
Kukoc,
was my four.
Kukoc, Rodman. You could throw any of the other two in there, and I'd be more than happy.
I loved Horace, too. I mean, when I was a kid and I was younger, obviously, that first three-peat, you know, I was still in high school. And coming up, I loved Horace so much. I was so mad at Horace when he was on the Magic and he was waving that towel, York, in 95. Right. I was like, Horace, how could you do that to us? I was so upset.
How about Craig Hodges? How many was Hodges there for?
Hodges was on the first three, right?
Yeah. See, that Craig Hodges could shoot from three, kid.
Yes, he could.
Product of Rich East High School.
Yeah.
By the way, so just real quickly, because we have to go to break, but on this day, back in 87, Jordan scored 61 against the Atlanta Hawks. They lost the game. But this is what Dominique Wilkins told the Athletic.
The Bulls lost that game?
Yeah, they lost that game to Atlanta.
You get 61 and you lose.
So Dominique says he's in the locker room before the game. Jordan walks in. I'm like, what the hell is he coming into our locker room for? He tapped Randy Whitman on the shoulder and said, lace him up. It's going to be a long blinking night for you. And he walked out and he scored 61 points.
That's a no-no, man. Walk into the other team's locker room? That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, Whitman was in charge of defending him.
I guess.
Yes. By the way, do you guys...
I just like that assignment. Randy, you're guarding
You guys Michael were the hosts of the Doug Collins, Chris Collins Lunch for the Legend we did.
We were.
Do you remember the Chris great story Chris Collins told about Jordan?
I remember he told a story about his shoes, didn't he? Was it something to do with how he always got Michael's shoes when he was done with games?
Michael threw him a pair of Air Jordans, and Chris Collins is like, oh, my God, he's giving me a pair of Jordans, and he starts walking out, and Jordan goes,
that's right.
What the blank are you doing? Yeah, lace them up.
Lace them up. That's right. That's pretty good. That was at Morton's in Naperville. I remember that one, Yerk, when we did the Lunch with the Legend with Chris and Doug Collins.
Did Chris, Doug stop by for that one, too?
It was the two of them. It was Doug and Chris, yes, and Chris had just gotten back to town to take
the That may have been the job. Time that I just wore something like jeans and just a shirt.
Correct. Yeah. And they sent you to the mall to, like, buy a pair of slacks.
No, they didn't send me to the mall. Somebody went to the mall and got something. I'm like, you got the wrong guy here, guys.
Yurko's a jeans man. Don't you know that?
What do you think? I'm going to put a suit on to come to Morton's? So you got the wrong guy.
I love the things you remember. I do remember that, too. When we come back, Allie Quigley will join us for a few minutes. She's got her semifinal match tonight against Zach Levine. This is already in the can. She revealed that. She said,
granny shot. In this type of situation, the granny shot, because nobody ever does it or utilizes it, is a big, big move in horse. We'll ask her if she utilized the granny shot.
In one of the matches in the first round, someone did utilize the underhand. Like Yurko said, the one-handed underhand, that's a tough shot because you don't practice that. That's true. So we'll ask her if she utilized that in the semifinal match against Zach Levine. Plus, we got a few other things to still talk about. Scotty's separation from the Bulls, and 20 years ago today, Tom Brady drafted. So still more to do. Stick around. We'll be right back.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Carmen and Yurko with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Well, we need something with no sports, and we've had this horse challenge with a bunch of current and former NBA and WNBA stars. Allie Quigley is in the semis tonight against Zach Levine, Chicago versus Chicago, good kid. So, and I know this is already done. She's not going to spill the beans or anything, but make sure you watch it tonight in one of the semifinal matchups. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. We're pleased to be joined by Allie Quigley right now. Hi, Allie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
No problem. How'd this come together, by the way? Just like your agent just call you up and say, hey, they want you to participate in this horse contest?
Yeah, pretty much. She knew I had just got a hoop probably 2 weeks before that, and she was like, hey, I know you got a hoop. Do you want to play horse on ESPN? I was like, sure, why not?
So you just got a hoop for the house so you could like stay sharp during quarantine?
Yeah, that and just for the summer, just to mess around with my nieces and nephews if there was, going to be a real summer.
Yeah.
And just to play around with, yeah.
Not bad. All right. So you did well in at the beginning now, and I know you can't spill the beans about anything, but, like, how do you start preparing for this when you know you're going to do it? You just start going out and doing trick shots? Or, like, what was the preparation like?
Yeah, it kind of all came together last minute. So the day before, I was just asking my siblings and friends, like, oh, you guys got any ideas? What kind of trick shots? And then just bouncing some off Courtney and just going out in the backyard and trying them, just like the old days.
Yeah, right. How good are you from distance? Like, and like, how much room do you have to be able to shoot? Zach's setup looks ridiculous, by the way. Like, how much?
Right.
Oh, my God, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, like, he's got a really good setup. Can you shoot from a pretty good distance on yours?
I mean, I can do an NBA three from both wings, but not top of the key, and maybe only one corner I can do a three. So I'm going to have to stay pretty close to the basket with him.
What's your go-to shot? Like, when you know, if you can put the hammer down on somebody, what's your go-to shot?
Well, I think the sit-down shot. It looks easy, but it's kind of difficult.
The sit-down shot is tough.
Yeah.
From 15?
Yeah, probably from 15, yeah, and a bank shot for sure. I mean, I think you gotta put more on it than you really think.
The good old-fashioned bank. It's a lost art in the NBA, isn't it? What, Allie, what have you heard about what's going to happen this summer? Like, I mean, what have you heard about playing again? Or are you trying to stay in touch with people as much as you can? I mean, certainly there doesn't appear there's going to be fans in the stands as sports kind of comes back, but what about your season at some point?
Yeah, we haven't had an update since they decided to postpone training camp and the start of the season. So I mean, I'm kind of with the rest of the world, just watching the news, and every time I watch, it doesn't really look good. So I'm just trying to stay in the moment and just be ready for whatever.
Yeah. Are you going to watch, are you excited to watch the Jordan stuff in The Last Dance, which debuts on Sunday?
Yeah, I've been excited since they started advertising it like years ago. So, yeah, I'm pumped. I can't wait for Sunday.
It's going to be pretty sweet. Can you, without giving anything away for tonight, can you give us like a little sneak peek about what we can expect?
A little sneak peek.
It's not easy, is it?
Oh, Lord. Yeah, some more acrobatics from Levine. And, yeah, I think it goes back and forth. It was a pretty good game.
Was it really?
Back and forth. Yeah, it was.
You didn't have to do a handstand or anything like that. Those types of acrobats.
Oh, Lord, no. You'll see, though.
Zach's a pretty good athlete, isn't he?
I know, right? I mean, they said no dunking, but he can still find a way to do some pretty ridiculous things.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be watching tonight. Allie, thanks. We appreciate the time.
Thank you, guys, too. All right. Stay safe.
We'll see you. You stay safe, too. That's Allie Quigley from the Sky. Yeah, so she just got the hoop in a couple of weeks ago. Stay sharp, you know. And,
you know what's another great go-to shot, Carm, is you throw one off the head like soccer.
You
put it up there from like a 3-4 footer.
Yep.
That's always a good one. They look at you like you're nuts. If you've never headed a soccer ball, to do it with a basketball just to be able to have that control, that's a go-to shot for the game of horse.
I like the that's a good one, York. I always like the bounce shot, and I'm using it a lot now because my son really likes basketball, and we've got the hoop set out back to 8.5 feet. So it's not the full 10 feet. You know, he's 8 years old, so he's got
small fry car. Yes. Small fry basket.
Small fry basket. So I have it set at 8.5, and we play a lot of horse. And I've taken, especially at 8.5 feet, it's so much easier. I've taken to the bounce shot a lot. I like that one, and it drives him crazy because he can't make that shot yet. He just doesn't have enough strength to get the ball down and then up into the hoop. And I also do like the sit down or on your knees shot. That drives him crazy too. So I eliminate him a lot with those shots. Yes, I'm still beating my 8-year-old son. Yes,
force the kid to go on his knees.
Beating him in horse. I should clarify that. That's not
you said
awkward.
Horse, right?
Horse. Yes, beating him in horse. Yeah.
You're not starting with a W there, are you?
No. Beating him in horse.
Oh, boy,
yes.
I hope not.
Beating him in horse.
That'd be an additional shot there.
It drives him nuts anytime I do one of those two. For a little while, I was doing the like eyes closed from about. Not quite the free throw line, but maybe from like 10 feet doing the eyes closed. But he started getting good at that. Those were my go-tos. I love doing the eyes closed. Free throw line, eyes closed. That's always a good one in horse.
Yeah, they're uncanny. Uncanny, those little children. They'll come up with something.
They start to learn, too, you know. They really do start to get good.
And I used to utilize when I was a kid from distance. I used to throw more of a hook shot, like a running hook shot.
Yeah.
Because I had to chuck the ball at the basket.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? When you don't have the strength to shoot it from about 19 to 20 feet.
Yes.
You got to build the momentum, and then you sit there and you kind of hurl it up there against the wall.
Yeah.
Always utilize the backboard on that type of shot. But just a little baby hook from distance.
Good old-fashioned game of horse is still fun. So yesterday was the 20th anniversary of the Bears drafting Brian Urlacher. Today's the 20th anniversary of the New England Patriots selecting Tom Brady 199th overall. Brady was, he was the 7th quarterback taken. The 6 quarterbacks ahead of him that year have a combined NFL winning percentage of 448. They won 44.8% of their games. That's their combined winning percentage. Tom Brady's winning percentage is 774. He's won 77.4% of his games in the NFL. I think I should. I mean, there's no way you'd get these. I think you'd remember two of these players, York, that went ahead of him. You'd remember one for sure. One went in the first round. He was the best one out of the group, and he did have a halfway decent career. He never had much of an arm, but he was always a very accurate passer. He was from Marshall. He was drafted.
Chad Pennington.
Chad Pennington.
Sure.
If I gave you 100 guesses, and I
need colleges, I wouldn't be able to guess.
And if I gave you his first name, you wouldn't get it. His first name is the same as my son's, Giovanni.
Giovanni DeSantos.
No, it was not Giovanni DeSantos. Now you were just coming out of the league. Do you remember?
I remember Giovanni something. He
played at Hofstra.
No, go ahead.
Giovanni Carmazzi.
Yeah, that's was taken
the 65th overall.
Oh boy, somebody got fired over Giovanni Carmazzi. What's next?
Well, I mean, Giovanni Carmazzi sounds like he should be playing for the Italian national soccer team, not being drafted out of Hofstra, 65th overall.
So give me the next quarterback.
Chris Redman was taken with the 75th overall pick.
I'm glad you didn't ask me to guess.
No. This guy you'll definitely remember. He didn't do anything in the NFL, but he did win a national championship in college at Tennessee.
Oh, at Tennessee?
Yes.
T. Martin.
He was 163rd overall. This guy was taken 168th overall, so we're getting closer to Brady. He had a halfway decent career, especially early on with Mike Martz when he replaced Kurt Warner in St. Louis.
Oh, boy, and I can't pull his name.
I got you. Let me,
Go ahead, Merck.
Mark Bulger.
Mark Bulger out of West Virginia. That's right. And you guys wouldn't get this one if I couldn't even give you the clues because honestly, I don't remember the college. I don't remember. Yerk, I don't remember. He was so, it was so random. 183rd overall. I have no idea where he went to college. Spurgeon Wynn was taken ahead of Tom Brady.
Spurgeon Wynn, was he Florida?
No, for Spurgeon, Wynn didn't play at a big school. No. I'd be stunned if he did, Merck, because we would more remember that.
I couldn't tell you. You guys could look it up. So here's the interesting conversation Carmen and I had earlier. I'm looking at the clock right now just to make sure I got a little bit of time.
Yeah, we got it. And we'll come back and we can discuss it more. But go ahead. Set it up, Yerk.
I'll set it up. We looked at who could be the Hall of Famers in this draft class.
Right.
One of them for sure is Brian Urlacher because he's already in.
He's in.
You go through the rest of this class until you get to Tom Brady. You really kind of got a head scratcher. Then we get to the name of names.
There's one guy that Yerk and I there's one guy Yerk and I would argue, and we could give you a very passionate argument as to why this guy should be in someday.
Yes,
but we also don't think he's going to get in. And
I think he's going to get in.
You do?
Yes.
Okay, we'll talk about
talk about him
when we come back next.
You're listening to Carmen and Yerko.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So Yerko was looking at that 2000 NFL draft 20 years ago. Brian Urlacher's in the Hall of Fame. Tom Brady will be. They might be the only two from that draft class. I don't know what normal average is, to be honest with you. I'm not sure, Yerko, how many guys end up going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, there are outlier years like 83, right, where, you know, there's like five from the first round or six from the first round now that Jimbo's in, right? I think there's six with Jimbo going in from the first round alone. You know, so and most of your Hall of Famers, let's face it, are going to come from those first couple of rounds. So I don't know what average is, but it might only be two from that 2000 draft. But go ahead and tell everybody the name that you discovered from that draft that has a good shot someday. We both think that he should probably get in. I just don't know that he will.
So the guy that we really like, that I look at, and you know, you want to talk about leading the league in certain categories, and he had a five-year run where he was probably the most dominant running back of all time as far as it comes to touchdowns over a five-year period. The kid out of Seattle from Alabama is Sean Alexander.
Yep.
Sean Alexander was phenomenal. How many touchdowns did he have over 5 years?
His five-year prime, he scored 98 touchdowns in 80 games. That is obscene. 98 touchdowns in 5 years.
And he's got over 100 touchdowns. That easily puts you in the Hall of Fame. He also had seasons where he had 18-plus 100 rushing yards and 1,600-plus rushing yards. He finished career with 9,000-plus yards, over 100 touchdowns. I'm sorry, Carm, but if people are going to tell me Frank Gore belongs into the Hall of Fame because he's hung out for about six more years and gained an extra 3,500 yards, then there's no way in the world you're going to tell me that Sean Alexander is not. He was a more dominant player than Frank Gore ever dreamed of being.
Yes.
By far.
By far.
By far.
This would be the Terrell Davis treatment, where it was a 4 or 5 year run because of injury. That's all it was for Sean Alexander. Now, he didn't have the postseason success that Terrell Davis had, and some of his legend was made up in the postseason. I mean, I get that, but if you're going to put someone like that in, and I think TDs was really only 4 years, the 5 year run from 2001 until 2005 for Sean Alexander was as good as any. Again, 98 touchdowns. He had an approximate value, according to ProFootballReference.com, of at least 11 in each of those seasons. Anytime you get into double digits, you're pretty dominant. He went 12, 11, 14, 13, and 17, and he averaged about 4.8 yards per carry during that span. I mean, they used and abused him. He had over 300 touches every year,
right?
You know, and his body just broke down. His last couple of years, he wasn't very productive. He didn't even play much. He hung around for three more seasons after 05, but was nowhere near as valuable or as productive. But this is the Terrell Davis treatment, or the Kurt Warner treatment in a sense. Kurt had more than just four or five good years, I guess. But it's that short career that was so unbelievably dominant, you can't ignore it.
Right. And I mean, to be fair to Frank Gore, and I will be fair to Frank Gore, Frank Gore has been a productive back for an extended period of time, you know, in his longevity in the game. But his level of excellence compared to the level of excellence that you get from Sean Alexander, there's two different things.
Yeah.
And Alexander was a dominant player for an extended period of time.
Dominant.
Frank Gore is a good running back. He's a good running back that has been able to amass a ton of yards because of his longevity.
And you got to give credit, I guess, to that. I mean, I suppose that's the argument for putting him in, right? It's like a lifetime achievement award.
They're going to give him credit for that.
Yeah.
He's going to get it.
He's going to get it. You're
right.
But
I'm saying, when I look at Sean Alexander was a much greater back than Frank Gore was.
Scored.
And that's just being honest.
He scored 112 touchdowns in 123 career games. That is remarkable. So, yeah, we both agree with that.
A guy that's in a similar category that was dominant for a short period of time was Priest Holmes. Now, I'm not going to come here because Priest Holmes didn't have enough years.
Yeah, he only had like three, right, Eric?
Right. I'm not going to come to the people and say, hey, listen, well, Priest Holmes and those three, well, I don't know if three is enough, you know?
Yeah, three might not be enough. You know, five is a little, those extra 2 years do probably matter. Boy, Priest Holmes, though, man. Those 3 years.
Well, at least two, because two were very dumb.
01, 02, and 03, it was stupid. I mean, he had over 2,000 yards from scrimmage every year.
He won an MVP, right?
He might have. He had three straight years where he had over 2,000 yards from scrimmage. Merck, I don't know if he ever... Yeah, he did, 02. He was offensive player. No, I'm sorry, he was offensive player of the year. So that's not MVP.
So he was the offensive player of the year, and he was scheduled to come out when I was working at Sporting News Radio with JB, James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have one of those passes to get into Radio Row. So I'm walking him in, this the security from the NFL, I'm sorry, he can't come in, he doesn't have a pass. I'm like, do you know who this is?
Priest Holmes.
And they're like, he's one of the best players in your league. And I'm like, without a pass, he's not anyone. He can't come in. So Priest Holmes could not come in.
Was he mad?
He was laughing.
Was he really?
Yeah, he said, apologize to JB, man, I'm sorry.
And How about that? Yeah. Speaking of MVPs, this is funny. I want to play this for you real quick, Yerk. This was a message that, you know what Cameo is, right, Yerk?
Cameo is it's Cookie.
No. Cameo is celebrities. You can.
Yeah, you
have a celebrity send a message, right?
Cap's on Cameo.
Yes, I'm on Cameo. Sylvie's on Cameo. No, we don't. We charge like $25.
Charge $300 to send messages to children.
Sylvie donates all of it to charity. That's what I should. I don't even get Cameo requests. I'm not big enough to get Cameo requests. But this was good. Merkin got this. Should I just play it, Merk?
Let me set it up real quickly. Okay. So all throughout my freshman year in college, my best friend, well, still one of my best friends, he lived across the hall from me. We ended up being roommates for 3 years. He was under the belief that Andre Dawson took Ozzie Smith's MVP from 1987.
Okay,
we must have had 100 arguments that Andre Dawson didn't deserve that MVP.
Wow, that was his content. Was he from St. Louis?
No, he's from Minnesota.
He's from Minnesota. Yeah. Okay, but he said that there's no way in 87 the Hawks should have been the MVP. It should have been Ozzie Smith.
Right.
So then this is the Cameo message that Merkin gets last night.
Hi, this is the Hawk, Andre Dawson. And I'd just like to send a shout out to Randy Zoff, Zinni, and Adam, and say thank you very much. As I understand, you're all big Cubs fan, and I was one of your favorite Cubs. Well, thank you for your loyalty and your allegiance to the Northsiders. At the request of Eric, sorry, Eric, I can't honor your request. He wanted me to agree that Ozzie Smith should have been named National League MVP in 87. Well, actually, I thought Eric Davis and Jack Clark had better years than Ozzie did. I'm just saying. And besides the fact that I destroyed the Cardinals that year, that was a no-brainer. Listen, you guys stay safe. Take care of yourself. All the best until baseball itself returns. Continue to fly the W and go Cubs go. God bless you.
How great is that message, Yerk? And I think he was hoping that the Hawk would just read it and not really pay attention. Right. And
Not going to happen.
I mean, how great was that?
Mozzie had zero home runs, 75 ribbies that year. 104 runs scored. The only time he ever scored more 100 runs in a season.
And I get what his brilliance was, his defense. And he certainly helped the Cardinals win many games with his defense. And I am impressed by his .392 on base average that year. That's very good. Ozzie Smith, in 600 at-bats that year, had 44 extra base hits. 44 extra base hits in 600 at-bats.
Well, that's not a ton, Carl.
Are you kidding me? I mean, and the game was so different, and Ozzie did finish second that year, and he was the Wizards. I get it. He was the Wizard. He was brilliant defensively. But, you talk about how leagues and ideas and just what we value has changed over the years. He was a 105 OPS plus player. 105.
Give me lifetime earnings for your guy.
For Ozzie Smith?
Ozzie Smith, lifetime earnings. Played until 1996, 78 to 96. 19 seasons.
So 19 seasons. I'm going to say Ozzie made... I mean, he was a star. At some point, he had...
I'll say $50 million.
No way. I was going to say like $25 million.
No, he made $35 million. They didn't give me his first 4 years in San Diego. So I'm figuring that he wasn't making a ton of money. The most he made was $3.5 million his final year.
Yeah.
And the most they have up here that he made his first year with St. Louis, $450.
I love that message from Hawk. That was so great.
That is great. Oh, the cameo stuff when you get
and he
stuff
goes, and
like
I killed
that.
The Cardinals that year.
Now, does he get paid for not sending the message?
Yeah, I think you get paid no matter what.
Still get paid just for the effort of doing it, even though you didn't send you didn't say what you're supposed to.
I think so. That's hilarious. Mm-hmm. All right,
what does Hawk charge? $300?
What is? I wonder. I bet you $100. We can look.
I'll find out.
Yeah,
let you know.
I bet you it's $100. We'll take a break. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Crosstalk.